House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, and the time is 9:03. Members present, Representative Knopp, Representative Lavon, Representative Tilton, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, Representative Merrick, and myself, Representative Johnston. Representative Sullivan Leonard has an excuse absence. Today's agenda will be hearing Governor's confirmation hearing for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Board of Trustees appointees are Anita Halderman and Rhonda Boyles. Then we'll be doing House Bill 268, which is the Muni Bond Bank loans. Please silence your cell phones. First, the Governor's confirmation hearing for Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees. The Speaker referred the following government appointees to the Finance Committee. Anita Halderman, member of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees, is online. Are you there?
Yes, Representative Johnston, I'm on the line. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Members should have Ms. Halterman's resume in front of them. And Ms. Halterman, will you please put yourself on the record and begin your introduction?
Yes, thank you, Representative Johnston. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to introduce myself. For the record, my name is Anita Marie Halterman. I have been married for over 35 years, and my husband and I have three daughters and two grandchildren that we've raised in Alaska. I am happy to be a recent selection for appointment to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Board of Trustees. I actively took my role on the Board of Trustees in August of 2019 and recently assumed the role of Chair of Audit and Risk Committee. Despite already starting my work at the Trust, I've been anxiously awaiting my confirmation this session. Serving on the Board of Trustees so far has been an amazing journey, one that has expanded my knowledge and afforded me new opportunities to pay it back to society and to learn about new strategies and funding opportunities that can help shape meaningful reform for our program. I would very much like to continue that journey. Some of you know me from my brief tenure working in the Alaska State Legislature during the 29th Alaska Legislative Session. While I met many of you during that time period, some of you are new and we have not yet met. While I have reached out to some of you by text, email, or phone already, I have not been able to connect with all of you, but that time will come. For those of you that don't know me, I first arrived in Alaska in the 1980s after discharging from the United States Army, and I followed my husband, who was active duty and stationed at Fort Greely in Delta Junction. We raised our eldest daughter there during the first few years of her life and fell in love with Alaska. While we watched the economy suffer and had to leave Alaska for a brief time, we came back as soon as we were able, and we've lived in Eagle River for over 25 years since moving back. I earned my MBA from Wayland Baptist University in Anchorage, and I have an extensive background working mainly within the Department of Health and Social Services Medicaid program for both Iowa and Alaska. Spending my last 7 years within HASS, I worked within Senior and Disability Service programs as a program manager and a supervisor. I also have experience working with Child Support, the Department of Corrections, Public Safety, and Public Assistance Programs. I have worked for the state of Alaska for about 19 years, and I have over six years of experience working with the state of Iowa. I have worked through welfare reform initiatives in two states and helped kick off Alaska's first food stamp reinvestment plan after the Alaska Department of Health and Social Service Programs had been sanctioned for high error rates in the 1990s. I train staff on regulations, program and policy in the welfare offices in and throughout Alaska, developing programs and reducing error rates. I have devoted my life's work to working with populations that are underserved, and I find it rewarding to improve the programs and systems that they utilize in order to provide the provision of services to the beneficiaries of those programs. After leaving the Alaska Legislature, I started my own consulting business, joining the ranks of the private sector. I obtained licenses as an insurance producer with lines of authority for accidents in Alaska, health, and life, and with lines of authority for Washington with life and disability. I also began working with an information technology company, working as an account executive. Positioning Risk Management and Human Resource Solutions for Businesses has given me a new perspective about the healthcare needs for privately insured individuals, and it has expanded my understanding of more global workforce issues that Alaska faces as we move forward. I very much hope to take my experiences and help reform the programs for the future so that we can sustain them for our populations that need them most. And I look forward to continuing to work to improve the lives of the trust beneficiaries as we work in partnership with the Department of Health and Social Services, other stakeholders, and to build that integrated, comprehensive mental health program that better meets our trust beneficiaries' needs. I want to thank you all for your consideration. I appreciate your support, and I look forward to working with all of you to protect the trust and maximize the benefits to solve Alaska's mental health problems. Thank you.
Thank you, and we've been joined by Representative Carpenter. Representative Knopp, you have a question?
I do. Mrs. Halterman, thanks for joining us this morning and for introducing yourself. It always helps when we don't get an opportunity to meet face-to-face. But I wanted to ask you, so what I think I heard you said, ma'am, is that you've been here since the 80s, worked for the state for 19 years, and I'm curious about I thought you said Iowa Medicaid system for 6 years, and I'm kind of wondering how in that career span since the 80s to present, where'd that Iowa time come in at?
Representative Kopp, through the chair, my husband and I left Delta Junction in the late 1980s after or during the recession. We moved back to Iowa for approximately 9 years, and I worked for state government in Iowa. During a time period where welfare reform was just beginning to hit the nation, and Iowa had just finished some sanctions for error rates down there. So I came on at a time where we were just really aggressively learning public policy, understanding the federal guidelines, understanding food stamp law, understanding Medicaid law, and I worked with emergency assistance and emergency relief programs in that state. I also did a lot of appeals work while working there and here in Alaska. After approximately 6 years with HESS in Iowa, I started working for the Department of Corrections as an inmate grievance officer for a brief time before my husband took a position with the state of Alaska and relocated back to Alaska. In early 1995, I returned to Alaska following my husband, who had come up shortly before me. My husband and I brought all three of our daughters here. Two of them still live in Eagle River with us or in our community, and one of them currently is located in Hawaii. But I spent a good number of years working out of state because of the recession. There were no opportunities in Alaska at that time, at least not for me.
Thank you, Ms. Halterman. I just kind of wanted a time frame. Thank you for that.
Are there any other questions? Representative Pelton.
Thank you. Good morning, Mrs. Halterman. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you, Representative Pelton.
Good. I know that you've done some extensive work in telehealth and telemedicine, and was wondering if maybe you could just, I don't know how you pare it down to just slightly, but if you could just maybe go into that just a little bit about your experience with that.
Yes, Representative Tilton, for the chair, I have been involved in telehealth since approximately 1999 when AFSCAN and ATAC, two organizations in Alaska, helped form a foundation for Alaska Medicaid to build reimbursement methodologies. And so in 1999, I struck pen to paper and drafted the first telemedicine reimbursement methodologies for Medicaid programs anywhere in the country. Those regulations are now mirrored throughout our country and serve many Medicaid populations around the globe. I have since worked, while working in the legislature, carried House Bill 234 in the 2016 session, which was a mental health parity bill, which encouraged better use of technology for mental health services, which had already been proven very valuable for a Medicaid population. And so I got exposed to the Alaska Collaborative for Telemedicine and Telehealth through those efforts. Working on the legislation exposed me to the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association's involvement with AKCTT, which is the Alaska Collaborative for Telemedicine and Telehealth. I have served as their president and have also served in the role of treasurer for that organization. I'm currently serving as a director, and I am watching with bated breath as our COVID crisis is creating an atmosphere that is going to encourage the better use of technology, and Medicare rules are being loosened. So I'm sharing insight daily about the activities on a national level, about what's happening, and I am on notice that the Mental Health Trust is going to be stepping in and providing at least some funding opportunities for us to advance some solutions. So I'm hoping that I will know more in the near future, but telemedicine has been in my blood since its very inception here in this state, and I'm excited to be a part of it. And sadly, seeing it take shape in the way it is, I think it will provide some meaningful relief for a lot of beneficiaries that are served through our trust. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you for your work in that arena.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Holderman, when you took the position of being a part of the Mental Health Trust board, when you arrived, we weren't looking at the COVID-19 situation. Obviously, that is front and center on everybody's agenda in terms of the immediate future. But setting that aside, when you arrived, what were your observations about the challenges that faced the Mental Health Trust, and what do you see as the long-term challenges for the Mental Health Trust?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, thank you for that question. There's a lot of uncertainty, I think, with regards to what our mental health structure is going to look like moving forward, although the trust has currently made a lot of recommendations for crisis intervention and funding for homelessness programs. I will continue to study those issues with a pretty good understanding with my HUS background. I hope to have that laser view and focus to redirect maybe some of our funding efforts to focus on populations that have been underserved by the trust over the years. We do well at some things, and I think there are things that need to be improved, although I see the trust administrative staff working very hard, and they're very talented individuals. It has been like drinking through a fire hose, literally trying to absorb the amount of information about what our responsibilities are, our governance, the audit requirements, the audit findings from previous audits. I want to make sure that we don't repeat some of the mistakes we've made in the past, and I'd like to see us move more in creative ways, working cooperatively with other departments to solve the problems of beneficiaries that cross over between all state agencies, that burden all of our systems, and find solutions that don't continue to burden our systems, and hopefully get people back on their feet. Dealing with substance abuse and mental health issues is critical to solving a lot of the other problems that kind of follow suit with those populations that are in need of services. So my hope is that I'll continue to learn from the leadership that is currently at the trust, and I'll absorb and continue to read as much information as I can, but I'll also be reaching out to others for advice and input about what their observations are about what's worked well and what hasn't worked well. I have learned in my many years of working with health and social services programs is that if you want to learn about where to improve programs, you look at your complaint department. Look at where people have raised issues about where you've fallen short on your program, and listen to the people that have been the subjects of those programs, because they will raise the issues that need to be resolved. And they may do it in creative ways, but if you really stop and listen to the populations that these programs are intended to serve, we can really get to focusing on what's more meaningful for those populations.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions? Seeing no other questions, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anybody in the room or online that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Thank you very much for calling in. And we will now go on to the next appointee, Rhonda Boyles. Could you please, again, you'll have Ms. Boyle's resume in your files. And Ms. Boyle, will you please put yourself on the record and begin with your introduction?
Good morning. My name is Rhonda Boyle, and ahead of time, I'm going to apologize if I have a poor connection. Apologize, brother. I am in Phoenix for the next 10 days and trying to get back to Alaska, which isn't easy just these days, but my connectivity at the base of White Mountains, where my home, my second home, is pretty poor this morning because we have snow and hailstorms. So that should make everybody there feel a little bit better. But I am Rhonda Boyles, and I have lived for 44 years in the interior of Alaska, up until 3 years ago when I had to bring my husband to Phoenix because he had a very difficult to diagnose form of dementia, which is diffuse Lewy bodies. And in that process, he could not, once diagnosed, and he got worse very rapidly because it's fast moving, I couldn't bring him home to Alaska. So we built a home here where I could hire staff and keep him with me at home under the care of Banner Alzheimer Research. He passed away April 1 of 2019, and I went back to Alaska immediately and decided I wanted to live closer to my son in Anchorage and bought a townhome in Anchorage. At that time, the governor's office called and asked if I would please submit my resume for this trust. And what I knew about it was next to nothing because I've been concentrating on taking care of Vernon. Prior to that, in the interior, I was always in business. I owned three Wendy's restaurants. I served as the mayor of the Fairbanks North Shore Borough. I got, after serving in public office, and my compliments and gracious thanks to all of you for what you do. It's stressful. So I hid, went back to my nursing career, which was in my early adult years, and worked in the State Pioneer Home for almost 4 years, taking care of wonderful Alaskans, not supervising anybody, and my favorite wing was dementia. So what prompted me to have an interest in the trust was that the beneficiaries are in that category, as well as many others. I believe that my resume is quite diversified. I have land management, I have formal and personal trust management, and sad to say, financial management, which with what's going on right now, I'm trying not to watch the Dow because I can't handle it. And I think that is probably a short-term as you've asked Anita, a short-term issue with the Alaska Mental Health Trust will be what that investment under the permanent fund, what that's going to do in the near and long-term future. So that is, I was educated at Yale, born and raised in Maine, and I am anxious to contribute now to the state of Alaska. I'm not ready to leave. There's much work to be done there. I love the state. So I would very much like to serve in a capacity that's substantive. And as many of you, I have volunteered over 40 years in Alaska on many, many council commissions, boards, both appointed, some elected. This one is different from what I've ever done, but it's more substantive than many of the things I've done. So that's really what piqued my interest, and I'm willing to serve. Thank you for that time, and I'd be willing to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the members? Representative Lebon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Rhonda. And maybe I really don't have a question because I've known Ms. Boyles forever, and we have a strong business and professional and personal friendship history, and I would just like to thank her for stepping forward and being willing to serve in this capacity. And again, thank you very much.
Through the chair to Bart, thank you. It's nice to hear your voice.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I'll open public testimony. Is there anybody in the room or online that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I close public testimony. Representative Foster.
Yes, Madam Chair, the House Finance Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Anita Halterman, Mental Health Trust Authority member. Rhonda Boyles, Mental Health Trust Authority member. And this does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you. These names will be forwarded to the joint session. And I'd like to make sure that all members stay here and to sign the paperwork. Thank you. And thank you both for calling in. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Next, we'll be going to House Bill 268, an act relating to the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. Could we have a brief reintroduction from the sponsor, Representative LeBon, and his staff, Ann Rakers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Briefly, House Bill 268, Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, does a couple things. One is it removes the project scope limitation on projects with the University of Alaska and gives them an opportunity during this low interest rate environment to potentially refinance some of their debt. So that's one advantage to the project or to the bond. Second one would be it raises the cap from $87 million to $500 million. For regional health organizations, it removes the 49% project participation limitation on the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank for regional health organizations, takes it up to 100%, which saves regional health organizations money in refinancing or placing money through the bond bank without having to find partners to make it more complicated and more expensive. In the regional health organization piece, it raises the project limit from $102.5 million to a single cap of $250 million for a single regional health organization project, and it raises the total funding for that type of an organization up to that $500 million cap. So that's the very high view. That's a summary of the bill. And I believe we have online Mr. Devin Mitchell and Mr. Myron Dosh from the University of Alaska. Myron is the CFO, and Mr. Mitchell is with the Department of Revenue and the Immunity Bond Bank. So I believe they're going to go through the fiscal notes, Madam Chair.
And could we have the fiscal notes? Mr. Dosh or, and Mr. Mitchell?
Who would you prefer go first?
How about Mr. Dosh?
Perfect.
Sure. This is Chair Johnson. This is Myron Dosh, University of Alaska. I did speak to this last week. Basically, university support, House Bill 268. In the support letter, for illustration purposes, effectively this would, the university access credit through the bond bank, and an example of a $50 million bond over 30 years in current interest rates, actually interest rates as of March 5th, it would provide a benefit of about $50,000 per year, and that's $1.5 million over the life of the bond. So that's kind of the fiscal impact of this to the fiscal benefit, I should say, to the university, assuming that the university would access this this mechanism to obtain credit through the bond bank. That would be the benefit. Thank you. If there are any questions, I'm happy to address that.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Next, Devin Mitchell.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Devin Mitchell, Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank.
The fiscal note that we put together is a not to exceed amount for the activity that could be generated by the proposed legislation. How the bond bank program works generally is we have a floor of annual expenditures that we make, and then as there's activity, as there's lending activity, the annual budget would, the annual expenditures would increase, and so we have a not to exceed amount of a budget rather than a budget that we fully expect to expend during a fiscal cycle. This authorization for up to $360,000 per year would be directly related to any additional lending activity that the bond bank were to undertake as a result of making additional loans to the university or regional health organizations, and would be provided for out of what we call costs of issuance accounts that are funded from the proceeds of the bond issuance, and so they're incorporated into the interest expense that the borrower would be repaying, and so it would be program receipts, not general fund receipts, that would provide for this potential annual expenditure.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, is there any committee discussion?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, could Representative Lebon, could you present a hypothetical relative to a regional health organization's use of the bill?
Yeah. Thank you for that question, Representative Josephson. Through the chair, there's a number of projects that are in the design or developmental stage. If you had a small regional health organization, say in Cordova, which is one of the locations for a potential project, they would go through their period of underwriting and showing justification for the project. They would seek assistance from the bond bank in this case. The bond bank would help in showing the repayment ability, the capacity to perform. They would work with stakeholders, with potential clients, with potential users and surrounding communities that would benefit from this regional health organization. And it all needs to come together in a way that justifies a project to a level where bond purchasers are interested in supporting the project. So you'd have to show capacity to repay, establish the need, establish the clientele base. Mr. Mitchell could probably add more to that, but that would be my vision, that this would then enable that regional health organization to do a one-stop shop with the bond bank instead of going out finding two or three other partners.
And we also have Luke Wells of the Alaska Tribal Health System online.
He could answer that.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Wells?
Madam Chair, no. Representative Lebon just did a wonderful job in summarizing. It's again another tool in the toolbox of financing options for these projects. The big thing that we have is we have these joint venture projects that are coming up. We have five of them potentially in the state, representing about $700 million in potential construction over the next few years, where the Indian Health Service would pick up the cost of operating, maintenance, and staffing monies after these projects are built. And so it's incumbent upon the regional health organizations to fund the capital infrastructure. And after that, it opens up new revenues coming in, along with opening up new healthcare facilities in rural Alaska.
And thank you. And Mr. Wells, could you put your name on the record, please?
Yes, this is Luke Wells with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
And yes, thank you. Are there any other questions? We'll take a brief at ease. bring this meeting back to order. Co-chair Foster.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that the House Committee, House Finance Committee, move from committee CS for HB 268 Finance, which is version 31-LS1440/U, with the attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Would you like to speak to your objection?
Briefly. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I understand that adding tools to the tool bag is a good thing. And I fully understand that the bond bank staff would make very good decisions on how to spend money and finance things. But what we are being asked to do is accept an increased risk to the state at this point. And under the current circumstances and an unknown future, it would not be prudent to increase our risk. We don't know how long our financial crisis is going to last. If we were talking about this 10 years ago when we were flush with oil money, then it might have been a wiser decision. But at this point in time, increasing risk to the state is not a wise thing to do. So I will be a no vote.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in response to those concerns expressed by Representative Carpenter, I fully understand and appreciate those concerns. I guess I see two immediate benefits, and one of them was slightly touched on, and that is the opportunity to potentially refinance university debt at a significantly lower rate. We already have the debt. So opening up the opportunity, it's up to the university to seek out that opportunity on a case-by-case basis. They hold nearly $300 million in debt, so that's an important potential savings on debt that already exists. And as far as the regional health organizations, I mean, it's in our constitution that we take care of ourselves. We have an obligation to take care of all Alaskans. And if we can use the regional health organization concept to deliver primary health care services in rural Alaska in an economic manner that saves money and provides for improved health services, then I think we need to take full advantage of that. And all this allows is for those organizations to access the bond bank at 100% of the project instead of seeking out a partner that could ask for a higher interest rate on their debt. When you force an organization to split the financing among several entities, you don't always have parity with the pricing of that debt. So the bond bank may be cheaper than, say, USDA as the other partner. Why hamper them to seek the lowest rate possible? They may find a partner that matches the rate, and that's great, but it just gives them that option. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And just to weigh in here, 10 years ago, I maybe would have been less interested in this bill, where today, in today's circumstances, I am interested, and thus I'm interested in getting this out of this body. We do need all the tools for this year to come, and I would rather have those tools with a fiscally responsible organization and somebody that will assess the risk and will take advantage of whatever financing that's going to be coming in any stimulus package and any as you know, right now, our rates have been cut to zero federally. So I just think right now I would have been maybe a no vote 10 years ago, and today I'm a yes vote. Seeing no other comments, unless would you like to do a wrap-up? Seeing no other comments, could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Carpenter?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Merrick?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Tilton? Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnston?
Yes.
6 yeas, 2 nays.
With a vote of 6 yeas and 2 nays, House Bill 268 is moved out of committee. before I announce our meeting for 1:30, I'm sure all of you are aware that things are going to be very fluid and can be very fast, or very fluid and very slow. I hope you have patience with us, because we will be changing agenda as needed. But right now, I feel that we should continue to do our work that's in front of us. So with that said, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, at 1:30 p.m. On the agenda is House Bill 155, Alaska Performance Scholarship Eligibility, and House Bill 235, Alaska Workforce Investment Board Allocations. Any members have anything that they want to bring before the committee before we adjourn? Okay, we adjourn at 9:40 a.m. I call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2020, and the time is 1:57. Members present, Representative LeBron, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, Representative Wohl, and myself, Representative Johnston. Today's agenda will be hearing HB 235, Alaska Workforce Investment Board allocation. Please silence your cell phones. HB 35, an act relating to allocations of funding for Alaska Workforce Investment Board and providing for an effective date. Could I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move the committee substitute for House Bill 235, Finance Version 31-LS1480/K before the committee as our working documents.
Thank you. And could Aaron Schein, my staff, please come up and explain the CS?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Aaron Schein, and I'm staff to Representative Johnston and the Finance Committee. Can I have a brief at ease, please? All right. The work draft before you, which is the CS for House Bill number 235, Finance Version K, makes a couple changes from the previous version, which was version M. The first change you'll find is in the title. It's an updated title. It removes the language relating to employee contributions to Alaska Technical and Vocational Education Program. The next change is a new section one. The previous section one had change the rate from 0.16 to 0.18. This version reverts back to the 0.16%. So it is current language in statute, so there's no need for that section to be included in the bill. The next change is there's insertion of legislative intent. You can find that in section one on page one, line four through line 11. The next change is in section two. The date was in the previous version of June 30th of 2025. It is now June 30th, 2023, which is a 3-year extension instead of a 5-year extension. Then going to page two on lines four through line 13, the percentages are reverting back to the existing statute language. Previously, there had been an insertion of the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center that has been removed here and is addressed more in the intent language on the previous page. And Madam Chair, that's the majority of the changes. Otherwise, they were technical or conforming.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair, for Ms. Schein. Ms. Schein, currently, the University of Alaska Fairbanks spends some of its own resources to stand up this program in some way. Is that right?
Through the chair.
Notwithstanding TVEP.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would have to call on the University of Alaska or the sponsor for answering that. But I do know that in previous years, the Marine Science Center has received funding through the TVEP program, which is the bill that's being addressed before you today.
And we do have Miles Baker on the phone.
If I could, through the chair, Mr. Baker, does the university provide resources outside TVEP for this program in Kodiak?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, for the record, Miles Baker, Associate Vice President, Government Relations for the University of Alaska. We do, KSMSC is a facility that's part of the College of Fisheries and Ocean Science at UAF, and we do their budget for that facility over the last several years has been over $1 million. We put just close to $1 million of UGF into that facility on an annual basis. And if there is a request from KSMSC and the partners down there to get TVEP funding, that comes through the competitive process we run, and has typically been awarded. In fact, I think we've funded 100% of the TVEP request we've received from KSMSC, and that has averaged just about, and it goes up and down, but it's averaged around between $40,000 and $50,000 a year that has gone down. That's part of the budget for KSMC strictly through TVEP funds.
Follow up?
Yes. I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is to provide flexibility to the university. If it honored the intent language, it could decide, I'm not saying it should, I'm saying it could decide to reduce that portion of its own UGF that it provides to this, to the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences in Kodiak?
Well, I mean, those, Representative Josephson, through the chair, I mean, like all of our programs and facilities, which are frankly all being reviewed currently, we do an annual budget. In this case, this would be part of the budget that goes through the College of Fisheries and Ocean Science. I think the concern I would have with this intent language are the references to 1652.020 and 1652.030, which are not TVEP statutes. Those are statutes that create and govern the Kodiak Seafood Marine Science Center, which does more than under its statutory authority is involved in more than just the programs envisioned through TVEP.
A follow-up? Representative Wall?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Baker, so if the intent language says to sustainably maintain programs consistent with 1652.020 using TVEP money, TVEP funding, can you, the program that has been funded, you say, on the average of $40,000 to $50,000 a year consistently, does that program fall under 1652.020 or 030? I mean, is that being met already through the existing TVEP funding that's going on?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, the way I read the intent language, it says that we would allocate the amount necessary, and I'm assuming that is out of TVEP funds. We would allocate the amount necessary to maintain the programs consistent with 1652, which is the KSMSC statute, and the TVEP statutes. So, and that we would consult with the FIT Policy Council on that programming and planning. And as I mentioned, the 1652, which establishes the Kodiak Marine Seafood and Science Center, the duties of that center, which fall under the responsibility of the University of Alaska, the duties of that center are broader than the programming mandate of TVEP. So, I guess that's a little bit of the concern there is how we would have to work through that on how, because I read this as we'd have to maintain, try to be maintaining all the programs of 1652.010, which does include training, and it also includes technical assistance for the fisheries industry. It includes research and development activities related to the fisheries industry and new technologies around the fish industry. So those could conceivably be crafted into TVEP-eligible programs, but we'd have to work through that.
Follow up. And I guess maybe this is a question for lawyers and such, but if 52020 is broad, then maybe a smaller program that's encompassed by that statute would be consistent. It doesn't have to involve every component of 1652020, not everything that they do. In other words, they could micro pick a program that does fall under there but doesn't include everything. So I don't know, that's more of a statement than a question, but maybe a policy person more experienced than myself could answer that question. And if you can take a stab at it too, Mr. Baker, that's fine.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I think that's a good point. I mean, on line 8, and it does say consistent with 1652 and AS 5315, 82850, which is, so that could be read that we're sustaining and maintaining programs that are consistent both with the mission of KSMSC and the TVEP program mission.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Ortiz?
No, I have one question.
Okay. Brief at ease. I'll bring this meeting back to order. I will be removing my objection. Are there any other objections? Representative Ortiz?
No objections. So, I have no objections, Madam Chair, but I would like to offer a conceptual amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Conceptual amendment I'd like to offer refers to, on page 1 of the bill, line 7, after the word allocate, insert a comma, and then the words from the funds received under Section 2 of this Act. So again, I'll repeat, conceptual amendment, what it would do is after the word allocate, insert a comma, and then the words from the funds received under Section 2 of this Act. And if I may, Madam Chair, I'll explain the intent of this.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, thank you. So, Madam Chair, this conceptual amendment ties the intent language to the university's TVAP allocation, which was the original intent of this language. Currently, the language in Section 1 doesn't specify where the source for programming consistent with 1652020 comes from. By clarifying this language, we are returning to the original intent of the using of TVAP funding to support the seafood industry. And that's all it is. And again, this is just adding to intent language.
I will move my objection. Are there any other objections? Okay. Representative Foster?
I guess, just for purposes of a question to the university, I will object if I could ask a question.
Yes.
Do I read this as, so it is the intent of the legislature that the University of Alaska allocates, and then the comma, from Section 2, and Section 2 is the TVET money, and currently the program, according to Mr. Baker, the university funds $1 million, and then TVET, the portion of the TVET is only about $40,000. So would this, and I don't think it's the intent to say that the full million, $1,040,000 comes out of the TVIP, but would that be what this amendment would create? No? Okay.
No.
Mr. Baker, have you seen the amendment?
Representative Foster, through the chair, from my reading of this, I don't think this, and I appreciate the amendment it was just offered, I think that does clarify that we're talking about the TVEP allocation. I don't think this in itself would change anything about how we currently budget and plan the activities at KSMSC, other than it tells us to please focus on trying to increase using available TVEP funds what we're doing for the fish industry down there. So we currently, as I mentioned, in FY 2019, for example, the total budget was a little less than $1.7 million. So it included UGF. It included about 40,000 of TVEP funds. So they had applied and gotten a TVEP grant. We had another $630,000 of unrestricted fund revenue grants. So those were other grants that were brought in by the faculty and the researchers at KSMSC, which brought their total budget up to 1.6. So we certainly don't read this as we would be reducing those activities so that it would stay consistent with what's available through TVEP. I think we would take it for what it is, which is let's double down and increase our focus as able through the TVEP program.
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
Okay. At ease. Order, Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the committee substitutes for House Bill 235, Finance Version 31-LS1480/K from committee as amended with the forthcoming fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Are there any objections?
Madam Chair, I need to object just for this. I had a conceptual amendment I wanted to offer, and you kind of got by me with the motion before I had a chance to make a conceptual amendment. Is that still a possibility? At least for discussion. You may not adopt it, but I'd like to introduce it.
I can withdraw.
At ease. call this meeting back to order. Are you maintaining your objection, Representative Knopp?
No, I would move my objection.
Okay. Are there any other objections? Seeing none, then House Bill 235 passes this body. Please stay here to sign the bill. So, our next meeting is tomorrow, Thursday, March 19th, 2020 at 9 a.m. Our agenda will be to be determined. We're waiting to see if some other bills are coming quickly from the other body. So, as I said earlier today, this is all very fluid and some might say rather tense. And is there any other comments anybody would like to make? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to address a concept that came up during some of the public testimony, which had to do with the amount of the percentage of payroll that went into a certain industry, and that somehow that percentage should be reflected in the TVEP investment. TVEP is not based on payroll or paychecks or percentages of earnings. Never has been. It's based on programs, and maybe some of these programs should be looked into more closely. And that's probably a good thing to do every so often. But whether you're in the seafood industry, the fishing industry, or in the oil industry, or in the healthcare industry, because all these industries have a TVEP component. So, and none of them evaluate paychecks, pay stubs, amount of money that people have earned, or what percentage should be invested in those industries. It's done on a you know, not on that basis. So I just want to clear that, because people are mentioning how much payroll receipts are going in, and that's not really what the TVEP program is about.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask Representative Wohl to elaborate on that a little bit, because my understanding is all the funding for the TVAP program comes from employee contributions to the TVAP program through the unemployment insurance, was strictly based on receipts, wages. So I wish you'd elaborate on that comment.
Through the chair to Representative Knopp, I will. That is where the funding comes from, correct. It's out of the unemployment portion of the contribution on people's checks. What I meant was how the TVAP program is distributed through all these learning centers and programs isn't determined by the industry's contribution to unemployment. They don't look at this industry and say, well, these guys paid a lot in and they get a lot of TVEP money. It's nothing to do with that. It's just to do with what schools are working and what programs are needed for workforce development. So it's not based on how much people pay into it to determine which exact programs get funded.
Representative Knopp. So, and thank you, Representative Wohl, and I appreciate that, and I will agree with you on that point. But I think it's also fair to say that if a particular industry is paying an exorbitant amount of wages and unemployment insurance collected, paid into the fund, and they're paying TVEP funding to their employees, and seeing what they perceive to be a lack of funding for training in their industry is the argument that they make, and I can understand that argument as well. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or discussions before we adjourn? Then we will adjourn at 2:26.